Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Dusty White, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about the negative world again.
Once again.
Hey, first though, snacks. Snack shout out.
Yeah.
Katrina from Kazakhstan brought us some more Kazakh delicacies.
Yeah.
These are, I can't read Russian very well.
Yeah.
I could at one time.
Very well. Oh, so this means.
I could read Russian
at one time. Bob went to Russia for a minute. Did you know?
No, I did not.
But my Russian is rusty. So she says these are like Gardettos, basically. They're like the Ukrainian version of Gardettos. So they're bacon flavored. It's like a crouton.
It's a highly seasoned crouton.
Yeah, it's very delicious. She wants to just continue introducing us to Russian and Ukrainian snacks. She's like, hey, we grew up on these. I want you guys to experience it. So thank you, Katrina. Also, Brian Sullivan. And apparently, I don't understand because there was this huge platter of Rice Krispie Treats. I mean, there was like 40 massive Rice Krispie Treats.
Lots.
So more than we could ever eat on this podcast. So the entire building today, all guests and visitors to Coramdale Church have been enjoying Rice Krispie Treats. These are from Brian Sullivan, but it was like his gospel community that dropped them off. So I don't know if it's like, I don't know how the gospel community was involved, if they were just the messengers or if this is like they commissioned Brian, hey, why don't you make some snacks on our behalf? So it could have gone either way.
Nice. I like gospel community efforts for snacks. Great. More gospel communities should contribute to the snack game here.
I'm in favor of it.
I mean, some First City gospel communities should probably.
We'll see what we can do.
I'm teasing.
So Aaron Wren's negative world thesis has gotten a lot of traction. We've talked about it on this podcast. I guess this first essay came out about 2 years ago, maybe. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about it since because he's naming something that we all feel. And to rehearse what Aaron Wren had said in this article that he wrote a few years ago, it was, you know, we used to live in a positive world toward Christianity. Then there was this season where the world was kind of neutral toward Christianity. Now we live in a world that's negative toward Christianity. And, you know, for whatever you think about that hypothesis, everybody agrees that he's naming something. He's naming something about how American culture has shifted over the past few decades. One of the, Aaron Wren apparently just came out with a book, Life in the Negative World, which I haven't read. And I don't want to knock a book I haven't read, but I always hate it when a blog post turns into a book because I feel like that those books tend to be, they should have stayed blog posts.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Rarely is it book worth.
Rarely is your blog post so good that we need another 100 pages on it. But I don't, you know, again, I haven't read it. But apparently in the book, he uses the Crossing Church in Columbia, Missouri as a test case or as a example of one of his hypotheses. And so recently the pastor of that church, Patrick Miller, wrote a piece at Mere Orthodoxy basically telling the fuller story and saying like, yeah, Aaron Wren uses us as an example of what happens when a church encounters the negative world. And part of the story is fair. And then Patrick's like, but there's more to the story than he told. And so we wanted to sort of talk about this piece as a fuller way of sort of examining this whole negative world thesis, because we just want to continue to, as Christians, think about how do we relate to and react to the cultural moment that we're living in? And a lot of people, a lot of Christians are trying to answer that question. And this negative world sort of hypothesis is sort of out there in the ether spinning around as people are evaluating what's our posture toward culture right now. And so it's always interesting to sort of talk about and continue to ferret out what does this get right and what does it get wrong?
Yeah. Real world examples always help test the hypothesis, test the theory. And this one does, well, when I read this article, I thought this affirms things in some ways and says, hey, here's where Aaron Wren's right, but it also brings some challenge, which I think is interesting in the ways that I would say he's right in some ways that I would actually think, I think you actually are missing.
Excellent. Why don't you get us there then, Chris? Get us into what does he get right and what is he missing? Yeah.
So we should probably give a little detail as far as the story first. So the Crossing Church back in, what do you say, like about 2008, entered into this relationship with a progressive documentary film festival called True False. And apparently it was a longstanding, deep relationship where the church participated in it. They sponsored some things. And so it really was this thriving relationship that got highlighted in places like the New York Times and Christianity Today. So Aaron Wren, the way he uses examples, say, hey, here's a great example of sort of the neutral world where progressive, maybe secular organization and the evangelical church can partner together in harmony and it's going well. Awesome. And then 2019, one of the pastors of The Crossing preaches a sermon on there are only two genders. Then the film festival started getting pressure to drop The Crossing as a sponsor. Eventually they do. And then all of a sudden there's these hit pieces and critiques of the church for upholding biblical views of gender. And then Aaron Wren says, here's an example of the shift. It used to be a thriving partnership. Now it's changed, hence the negative world. And so what Patrick Miller wants to write and say, yeah, that did happen. And Aaron Wren gets the details right. He accurately portrays how that played out. And where he affirms his thesis, if we kind of get into more of the critique, is he says that where Aaron Wren is right is how he is identifying the issue of sex and gender in our culture today. That really his negative world thesis primarily focuses, primarily focuses on this issue. Like all of his examples center on this issue. A couple of examples of things like CRT and race, but largely the issue of sex and gender. So where Aaron Wren is right, according to Patrick Miller, is in his analysis of how the culture has shifted on the issue of sex and gender.
Let me read two quotes that say that. Patrick Miller writes, when you apply Wren's three-world framework to public discourse on sex, sexuality, and gender, his timeline makes rough sense. And he also says, those who held to traditional views of marriage in general and gender were not considered beyond the moral pale in most college-educated non-coastal circles. So what he's saying is, yeah, if you lived in the American heartland and had traditional views on sex and gender, it was a neutral world until just a few years ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And yeah, that's, I think it's an important point. As you said, that the experience of the negative world is really in a particular part of the country. If you're on the coasts, it kind of felt like that happened long before 2014.
Yeah. So I think it is interesting that he says, yeah, basically the Wren's hypothesis. And let's connect it to dates because he does that in the article. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, Wren's hypothesis was basically 1964 to 1994 positive world for Christianity. 1994 to 2014, neutral world. And then since 2014, negative world. And Patrick Miller says, if you apply that to sex, sexuality, and gender, that those are roughly the right categories. You know, you had 64 to 94, the world's still most of America is still a pretty conservative place when it comes to sex and gender. 94 to 2014, maybe more neutral. There's a lot of gay rights movements. There's a lot of attacks on traditional marriage, but there's still sort of a general consensus is like we can agree to disagree. 2014 on, if you're not a progressive on your views of sexuality and gender, you're ostracized. And so those are the dates to have in mind as you think about these shifts. Yeah.
So he wants to affirm that part of it, but then he also wants to start to push back on some of it, particularly how narrow he thinks Aaron Wren's thesis is that if you go outside the bounds of sort of this issue of sex and gender, it doesn't hold as well. So he highlights that at his church, kind of the rest of the story behind the scenes is that as much as they got pushback on this issue and took hits on this issue, they would say as pastors, they felt like they took more hits from essentially the right, that there were people who didn't think they were strong enough on anti-trans things, which was really, they thought was ironic. They weren't strong enough against like Black Lives Matter. There were certain issues on the sort of reactionary right that people in their church kind of held to that on that political spectrum began to give them a hard time about and criticize them for and even leave the church for. So what he wanted to say, if you want to look at the full story of our church, you have to see that we took just as much from the right as we did from progressive. And so what he wants to say is this negative world experience is actually broader and we have to account for that. And I think that's what's interesting in some ways to me is how when we use sort of Aaron Wren's thesis, and it is helpful, but if we reduce it to just that's the only thing going on in the culture, it's problematic because it's not a full picture. And it also, I think, in some ways can radicalize people in unhelpful ways.
Like okay, can I read a couple sentences that I think might resonate with some listeners to this podcast? Because I think it's to your point. He's saying, actually, I was drawing fire from both sides. And I think most pastors will relate to this. Here's what Patrick Miller writes. In a single day, someone publicly called me a CRT cultural Marxist, and someone else called me a white supremacist. In a single week, one family left the church because we weren't pro-BLM, and a different family left because they said we supported CRT. We took hard hits publicly for critiquing the January 6th rioters and for critiquing our school district for bringing children to a drag performance without parental permission. Does that resonate, guys? Have you had a week where you've gotten crushed from both sides?
That sounds like 2020 in my life.
Yeah.
I think most pastors can relate. And so it is interesting to your point, Chris, because I think many of the people who are most excited about the negative world thesis seem to me to be like right-leaning folks who kind of, you know, they're a little more reactionary. And yet what Miller is saying is like, actually, those people are part of who's creating the negative world. It's not just the progressive.
Yeah. And the reason why Patrick Miller wants to broaden the perspective is he thinks that if, as to your point, Bob, if we sort of narrowly focus on the sexuality part or the negative world, kind of progressive version of the negative world, that it can do things to us and create kind of a reactionary posture. And he puts it this way. If we come to believe that we live in a uniquely negative era for Christianity that outstrips the hardship of previous eras, it has a tendency to justify extreme measures in the present that ignore Jesus's plain teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. I thought that was an interesting critique in the sense that, is it possible that we were sort of malformed in our perspective and even malformed in our approach if this is all we see, sort of this negative world, as Aaron Wren frames it, perspective, without broadening it? And do we start to justify this more reactionary right, whether it be politically or whether it even be in the church? And so I think he's onto something. Even if I may disagree with some of the ways he frames this out, I think he's onto something in that there's a danger if we're too narrowly focused on what's happening in our churches, in our culture.
So you're saying his main contentions are twofold. One, that the negative world is created by both progressive and reactionary right voices or perspectives, that both of those things contribute to the negative world. And second, that when we focus on a sort of reactionary or defensive posture, it can lead us to, or when Wren's thesis makes us say, hey, we live in a negative world, and so we got to, you know, buckle down and really fight hard for our rights and, you know, defend our doctrines and stuff like that, that can create the wrong sort of posture, the wrong sort of response.
Yeah, wrong sort of posture and maybe even wrong sort of expectation. I mean, he also has this, I thought it was kind of a funny moment where he responds to Wren's suggestion that you move to a more conservative part of the country. And when he read that part in the book, he was like, well, good luck with that. It has its own challenges. And so it's just a narrow focus. It can create maybe a reactionary kind of posture in us, or perhaps a sort of missing or having misinformed expectations of where you're going to challenge. Hey, I'm in a conservative church. I'm in a conservative area. I'm not going to run into the, you know, some of the problems and pushbacks. And that, as we've talked about on this podcast, it's what can kind of feel weird for people is when someone like us, I mean, I would say we're all theologically conservative. I think that's pretty well established. And when we get attacked for not being theologically conservative, it feels super weird. And so if you think, hey, I've buttressed myself against the negative world, but I'm not expecting, I might actually get hit from the right in some ways. And that's going to feel weird for us. And we might not know what to do with that. So we have to just be aware of both sides of it in some ways. Even if both sides aren't necessarily equal in all things, we still have to be aware.
I'm intrigued by, I have a take that differs from Patrick Miller's take a little bit. But first, before we turn the mics on, Dusty, you were saying, yeah, this article doesn't really seem like it's going anywhere. Meaning like, you know, Patrick Miller's, it seems like the reason for writing the article is, hey, let me set the record straight. Aaron Wren used us as an example, and he was right, but he didn't really tell the whole story. The other side of the story is we were also taking heat from the Trumpy right just as much as the progressive left. So he's kind of, you know, it feels like the reason for writing the article is to say, let me tell you the fuller story.
Yeah, it seems
like
it. But
I'm not entirely clear that there was a whole lot he's doing other than that. You know,
yeah, like, I think he takes issue at the beginning, but towards the end, he's basically in agreement with like, hey, the negative world's there, and we're all living in it. Meanwhile, here's just the fuller story. So it's almost like, let me just set the record straight. Instead of a glance, he says, let's take a bigger swath here.
So here's my take. My take is, in the center of this article, which you already mentioned, Chris, he says, Wren's thesis is right when it comes to sexuality and gender. That's the place where our culture has moved, and where now as Christians we feel boxed in because the whole world is telling us, unless you're willing to sign up for, you know, trans rights and, you know, sex and gender revisionism, then you're a bad person. You're a hater. We don't like you. And so I think rightly, Christians feel like, well, I have the same positions on sexuality I've always had. I'm not the person who changed. You know, like, yeah, the culture, mm-hmm, you know, I think the same things about marriage that I did 30 years ago, but the world feels real different. And so this is where I think Aaron Wren names something helpful, because I think that's what the average person feels is like, hey, I'm a Christian. I've always had the same views on marriage and sexuality and sexual ethics that I always have. Same views now that I had in 1985, but the world feels real different now than it did in 1985. And that's the existential thing people are feeling. My take is this, that actually what's happening is the reaction on the right, the reason that there is a reactionary sort of spirit on the right that sort of compounds the negative world is that it's a reaction to the institutions of power, if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah.
I think Wren is naming two things. I don't want to speak for Aaron Wren, but I think what his thesis does is it conflates two things together. There's sort of the baseline sex and gender stuff in the culture that we all feel, but there's also the reality that actually most of the institutions in our culture, Hollywood, the big business, Google and Facebook, all the universities, have all embraced like woke, revisionist ideology on gender and sexuality. So what you have is those are the power brokers, and those people are now telling us, here's what you will think and here's what you will believe. And so what you have, I think, on the sort of like reactionary right is a pushback against that institution. It's sort of like now the people who are co-belligerents against that are an odd bunch of people, because it's like people who used to be progressives, but now because they think, you know, giving kids gender transformation surgery is wrong, now they're called right. And so they're just all like, well, fine, if you're going to call us right, then we're going to make common cause with whoever thinks what you're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's a weird, I guess what I'm saying is like, I think the categories of left and right aren't really the right categories anymore. Because we tend to think left and right in terms of progressive, conservative, liberal, you know, Democrat, Republican. But I actually think now it's the left is more the people who not only have a revisionist view of gender and sexuality, but are trying to impose that on all of society. And the right is everybody who disagrees with that. From, you know, Peter Boghossian, who is a non-Christian, to Colin Wright, who's an evolutionary biologist, to, you know, Ben Shapiro, and, you know, all the people who sort of are against that kind of all get lumped in together. And so it's a weird coalition, because it's people who politically are both left and right, but the thing in the culture is actually a pushback against the gender and sexuality stuff.
Yeah.
And that doesn't map along political lines quite as simply as it did in the 80s.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. And this is where Wren's thesis really makes a lot of sense, because it's shrunk to this single issue. I mean, consider even, 2020, 2021, race was the thing. We're not really talking about that as much anymore. Like, that has significantly drifted into the background. This issue has sort of become the dividing line. And I think you're absolutely right, Bob. Like, the traditional sort of a mapping of political viewpoints
right
has sort of been pushed into the background. This issue is the dividing line.
But so let me clarify what I'm saying a little more clearly. Where I think Wren misses is his hypothesis is it is a negative world toward Christianity. And what I'm saying is I think it's just a negative world toward anybody who is progressive on sex and gender.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it has zero to do with whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or an atheist. It has a lot to do with, do you agree with LGBTQIA plus or not?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, or you're skeptical of that in any way, whether you're J.K. Rowling or whether you're Al Mohler, doesn't matter. You're on the wrong side.
Yep.
And so to your point, Chris, when Aaron Wren tells us, hey, it's a negative world toward Christianity, I think he pushes Christians into a defensive posture that's not realistic, because the problem isn't that they're opposed to our faith. I mean, they're opposed to your faith, but really if you were a progressive Christian, they would be fine
with you.
It's less your faith and it's more the fact that your faith has a traditional view of gender and sexuality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I want Christians to have the wisdom to realize, hey, it's actually not that there's hostility toward me as a Christian. It's that the place of conflict right now is over, will I bow the knee to radical gender ideology? And as long as the answer to that is no, whether I'm a Christian, a Muslim, an atheist, an agnostic, I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so it's not about, like, let's defend the faith. It's not about Christians under persecution from the progressive left. It's more a question of who are our co-belligerents in the battle to hold to a realistic natural law view of sex and gender.
I would say, though, one of the things that it does do is highlight that we need to be discipling and preaching creation as much as we are redemption.
Yes.
Though, right?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, this goes back to a couple podcasts ago where we talked about that article that says, hey, we used to be hated for grace as Christians, but now we're hated for nature. And that really applies to whether you're a Christian or not. So if you hold to the idea that there is a natural order and a natural law, regardless of your faith, you're going to be hated. I think the other thing that and this is more of a critique of Patrick Miller's framing, is his experience with sort of the reactionary right and their church's experience with that. It is certainly a thing and certainly a problem in some ways. But I also don't know if it serves as the critique that he thinks it is, because he also wants to say that's a negative world kind of reality. And he uses the example of kind of dial it back to the kind of civil rights era, and you had people pushing against the desegregation of the South. And to me, I'm like, okay, that is a negativity, so to speak. But the people on both sides were Christians and were using Christianity as an institution to sort of buttress their perspective on things. So I don't know if you can use that as it's always been a negative world. I think there are other things you can point to as being, hey, it's been a negative world for maybe a lot longer than Aaron Wren says. But there are these kinds of critiques of kind of pointing back into history that I just don't think are apple to apple comparisons, because of how Christianity has been situated in sort of the past institutionally, to your point, Bob, institutionally. I think that is a big part of this as well, because where Christians are also, feeling that sort of that change and that shift is my Christian faith, which by nature requires me to acknowledge certain realities about the world. And if I uphold certain standards of sex and gender, then there's just really little space institutionally for us anymore. Where that wasn't the case, even, in the 1960s, whatever, you may have had an abhorrent view of race, but there was still institutionally places for you as a Christian. So I think that's probably my biggest critique of kind of how he frames this out and tries to push back on some of the things that Aaron Wren's saying.
It's also interesting to think about this framework in light of talking about progressive, gender ideology, all of that stuff, in light of internet communication, how quick and progressive we need to respond to things, in comparison to things in the past. Chris, like what you're bringing up, I used to have to like mail you a letter about that. Now, if you issue a statement, we got to issue a statement, and we better get that out, in the next minute or two. So it's interesting how technology has even enhanced this negative world reality we're living in.
Yeah. Do you think, so to your point, Bob, the fact that there's a wide sort of political spectrum that maps onto either side, so to speak, or let's just take those who hold to the traditional view of sex and gender, and it's a wide sort of political spectrum there, or can be. Do you think that can hold? Do you think that co-belligerence will hold? Or do you think people who are more progressive politically will eventually sort of fold, and we won't see quite the as broad a coalition.
It's going to hold.
Okay.
I was going to leave it at that and see if you had a follow-up.
Yeah. No. It's
going to hold because of natural law. I just think there's some segment of the population is just like, hey, this is like living in 1984. Like, you can't keep telling me that there aren't two genders because my eyes tell me there are, and I'm not an idiot. Yeah. So I don't think it has to do with like, oh, because I'm a progressive, eventually I'm going to have to like sign up for the party line. I just think there's a whole movement of people in the world. They're like, nope, this is, I have a whole different perspective on, and this is interesting to me in light of the negative world thesis, because I think the negative world thesis lends itself to, hey, progressivism is on the ascent and Christianity is on the decline. And if we don't fight for our way of life and fight for our values, there's going to be no space left for us in the public square. And so like, you know, let's all sign up for the fight. There's a sense in which I understand that. I actually think we're going to look back on this in 50 years and it's going to be like lobotomies. We're going to be like, wow, people used
to do that.
Apart. Like, yeah, I just think it's going to fall apart. Now, it's not going to without a fight.
Yeah.
But I think that the fight is actually not like as intense as we think. The fight just requires courage of institutional leaders to go like, yeah, we're not signing up for this anymore. And I think there's more and more of that happening. It takes some courage, but it's just the revolution is eating itself. You know, like they can't, you know, the DEI revolution eventually gets to such a micro unit of identity politics that it's just like now it's sort of combusting on itself. And all it takes is a few leaders to say like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. I mean, you might've seen a couple weeks ago, Ben Sasse announced that the University of Florida is terminating all DEI employees.
Yeah.
And he said, look, you can find another job in the university. We'll give you the top of the list for any other job you want, but this whole department, you're getting fired. And I was just like, well, that's what it takes. Like, if enough people do that, this sort of institutional push for the weird sexual ideology that is getting pushed is going to start to fall apart. Now, that doesn't mean it will go down without a fight. But I don't think Christians are going to be the only ones standing up and saying, like, this is not okay. I think there's going to be plenty of people from all stripes and all sides going, yeah, this needs to end.
Yeah, and I would say I tend to agree with that. You can only deny reality for so long before it comes crashing down. Because what and this is more of just a curiosity than I think any, you know, deep, profound statement that, you know, I'm always curious with people's political philosophy, how those things are formed and sort of what are the assumptions underneath it. But if you have somebody like Jonathan Haidt or somebody else that really does seem to be dug in with this idea of natural order, natural law, he might not necessarily use those terms, but he is identifying some of those things, or the importance of free speech, or he's seeing how the emotional effect that this is having. So he's trying to ground some things in reality that does seem to supersede any other sort of political ideology. And I think for people like that that would maybe code left, to use use a phrase, that seems that those folks will stand and they will hold. But if, I don't know, if there's these kind of appeals to maybe other sort of progressive values, I less see those folks staying there and maybe more being swayed out of that. So again, not a profound point there, but just more, it will be interesting to see as this continues to shake out and as the fight continues to go, sort of what really is grounding people's sort of stance on these things and whether or not that is a strong enough thing that's going to keep them there over the long haul.
Well, good question. My hypothesis is progressivism is a world dominating movement. It will not be satisfied with anything less than total victory. Mm-hmm. The problem is the goalposts keep moving, you know? And so, you know, once we take down one area of traditional values, we got to move on to the next one and dismantle it and move on to the next one and dismantle it. And what I'm saying is as that progress continues to go forward, eventually the human damage of that is going to start making itself evident in ways that I think people will go like, yeah, there, we don't need more progress. Like we can't keep progressing. Now, the challenge is there are people who hold that ideology who are going to continue pushing all of that down the hill. you know, as fast as possible. So I'm saying there's going to continue to be a conflict in our culture. There's going to continue to be a fight for that. But I am more and more convinced that that's going to collapse on itself, and it's going to be a small minority of people who are still advocating for the next progress, you know, the next thing to fall, while the rest of us are going to be looking around at the damage and going like, nope, I think we've destroyed enough of our culture. We need to start rebuilding some stuff again.
Yeah. It's also interesting in the United States, we just run at things with such extremes. I mean, you look at even Europe, like, which in a lot of ways is more progressive than we are on things, but they also have these like blocks. They only go so far. Like I think it was yesterday, the day before, that France passed some sort of law that made abortion illegal. Legal. But it only up to like 14 weeks, where, so there was this like celebration of, you know, hey, abortion rights or whatever. But then you look at it and it's like, but they put a governor on it. Where in the US, when we go, it's just like no governor on anything. Yeah. And so even some of the trans rights, gay rights, you know, various things that are very progressive in Europe, they come with these governors, where here we just, man, it's just pull all things off. We just have this extreme view of freedom. It's just like pull all the governor off. Let's just go all the way down. And so in some ways, our culture will probably crash uniquely, mm-hmm. and more spectacularly and damaging in a lot of ways, just because of the ways that we embrace no limits. It's just kind of the ethos of the US.
Yeah. Patrick Miller concludes his article this way. Jesus expected his followers to be joyful outsiders in every era, sojourners, pilgrims, exiles. When you realize that, you become much less reactive to the negative world around you. Christians have always lived in negative worlds, but each negative world is different. And I think that's a good reminder. Yeah, this is not a good new reality, and we're not talking about some new moment in the history of the world. It's just our moment. And so don't freak out. And again, maybe there's a point at which this conversation and this framing of Aaron Wren really isn't that helpful to us. So I hope Patrick Miller's article helps you sort of rethink the ways that maybe there's more nuance needed here, and think about what does it mean for us to go forward as Christians, as sojourners and exiles and outsiders in a world that never has welcomed the message of the Lord Jesus Christ, and yet that we inhabit with our friends and neighbors, and where we need to love them and reach the gospel to them and seek their good. So we'll post the article in the show notes if you want to read it for yourself. Thanks for listening, and thanks for going on this journey with us as we explore the negative world, and to what extent it's a helpful thesis and to what extent it might not be.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own churches for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your particular context. We always love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.